Florio knows a lot about a lot, but he knows even more about the NFL. This is Pro Football Talk Live with Mike Florio on NBC Sports Radio, where every day is game day.
This is the best of Pro Football Talk Live on NBC Sports Radio. I'm your host, Mike Florio. There's a lot of business to be taken care of the moment the clock strikes 4 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday, March 14. And that's one thing to keep in mind. So many deals have been reported. So many deals have been negotiated. No one even mentions anymore, oh, by the way, this can't happen until March 14. Rams acquire Aqib Talib from the Broncos. No, they didn't. Not till Wednesday. And it may seem like a technicality because these deals get negotiated on a wink and a nod and a handshake, and then they get it done on Wednesday. You know, like Josh McDaniels' deal to the The more of these deals that are done, the greater the chances one of them is going to fall apart. I'm not saying that anyone will, but we're already at six. How many more will there be before Wednesday? And is there a chance that someone will back out? I think that chance is enhanced when there is a deal with the player involved to restructure, extend, shorten, whatever, his contract. Because if that player gets cold feet at some point, then the whole thing could fall apart. Now, that won't happen with the latest news. The most recent move by the Rams. The Rams involved in four of the six deals that are slated to be done next Wednesday. Aqib Talib from the Broncos. That deal is being done with Aqib Talib's contract intact. $11 million salary for 2018. Too much for the Broncos, who have Chris Harris Jr. and Bradley Roby to start. If they didn't have Roby or Harris, maybe they would keep Talib and his $11 million salary, a luxury they can't afford. For the Rams, it's a necessity. That contract is going, as it is, $11 million. $8 million in 2019. And I'm told that Talib's representatives have made it clear to the Rams, he's not going to take less later. This is it. One of the points I made yesterday, Talib, and I don't know if I made this on the show or on one of the videos we do for NBCSports.com, but if Talib is asked to take less money, he should say, I'm not agreeing to a trade. Hey, Aqib, we'd like to trade you to the Rams, but they want to pay you $8 million instead of $11 million. Well, tell the Rams, go screw themselves. And you can go screw yourself. My contract says $11 million. If you don't want to pay me $11 million, cut me. Then you get to go do your deal on the open market. But the Rams willing to take on the $11 million and give up a fifth-round pick to get Aqib Talib. And now it's Talib and Marcus Peters. And also they signed Sam Shields on Thursday. That's the only one of the deals that's official. And Peters and Talib, my goodness. Oh, that's going to be a lively locker room. I said last night on Twitter, so Talib is going to rip off someone's chain and then Peters is going to throw it into the stands.
Well done by you.
It's going to be crazy. And oh, by the way, they play the Chiefs. Marcus Peters, soon-to-be former team. They play the Broncos. Talib's soon-to-be former team. And they play the Raiders.
Yes.
I hope the Raiders don't cut Michael Crabtree. Because it was that incident, that crazy rip-off-the-chain incident last year that got Talib suspended for a game. And it was that crazy incident against the Raiders where Marshawn Lynch came from the sidelines to try to protect Peters when he was with the Chiefs that got Lynch suspended for a game. So, must watch when the schedule comes out next month. Remember, it always comes out usually on a Tuesday, week or so before the draft. Get ready to circle Rams, Raiders, Rams, Chiefs. And Rams and Chiefs are playing in Mexico. And Rams, Broncos. And throw in Rams, Chargers for good measure. Because the Rams have two corners that know Phillip Rivers pretty well in Tlaib and Peters. If these deals go through. And there's no reason to think they won't. So, Peters is in. Tlaib is in. Robert Quinn is out. He'll be traded to the Dolphins. Alec Ogletree is out. He'll be traded to the Giants. And last year I read the Wade Phillips autobiography, Son of Bum, which had its moments. It felt a little restrained, which is kind of the way Phillips comes off. Like there's something going on there under that very calm and loose and easy facade that flashes once in a while. And every once in a while something would flash of Wade Phillips in that book. But at one point he touts his personnel abilities and that basically coaches should be trusted more to evaluate players. These moves have Wade Phillips' fingerprints all over them. Sean McVay's not in a position to decide that Peters and Tlaib will mean more to that defense than Quinn and Ogletree. Maybe Phillips wanted all four, but I think in the broader assessment of the roster, you know, Wade's saying, hey, if we get Peters, if we get Tlaib, if we get those two and we can lock down their top two receivers and you set Aaron Donald loose up the middle, I don't care who we have around Donald. We're getting to the quarterback. I think this is Wade's handiwork, and now the challenge is going to be for him to keep these guys under control. And first meeting, I could see Wade with that aw shucks, Texas twang, explaining to Peters and Tlaib how he went to bat for them. That a lot of people would have had misgivings about trading for either guy. And nobody would have been dumb enough to trade for both except me. But I know that you guys are football players. And I know that you guys are going to take care of me. And I know you guys are going to make me look good, not look bad, for putting my faith in you. Stat, you make a good point. The Rams, a primetime draw for 2018. Between their success last year, the buzz they're creating already. We haven't even gotten to free agency yet. We haven't even gotten to the point where these trades can be done. The Rams have dominated the offseason. And the Chargers are wondering, how do we sell tickets? Stat, you make a good point. We had Tom Telesco on last week, the Chargers GM. And he said that he doesn't consider that the Chargers and the Rams are in competition in L.A. Apparently he doesn't. Apparently, the Chargers have conceded the market to the Rams. The Rams are taking it, and the Chargers are just sitting there saying, interesting. Now, there's no guarantee this is going to work. I mean, Phillips is either outside the box or nuts, thinking that bringing Peters and Tlaib to the locker room is going to work. One of the realities of having guys in the locker room who push the envelope in a bad way. If you have too many, they can take over. Now, Peters and Tlaib alone, if the rest of the locker room is solid and strong, maybe they can influence those two in a positive way and keep them from doing things they shouldn't do on the field or on the sideline or just that kind of crazy, over-the-top stuff we've seen from both of them last year. Not saying anything that isn't true. But you got to be careful. This was the problem the Bengals had for years. You get enough of those guys, they take over. You get enough of those guys, and Carson Palmer eventually decides, I'm staying home. I've had enough of this crap. Like he did with the Bengals 7 years ago. So the Rams need to be careful as they go forward. And now, you know, every time it looks like they're dumping salary to pay Aaron Donald, they go out and they picked up Tlaib and his $11 million. I think the $11 million that went away with Robert Quinn, I thought they did that in order to create space and cash for Aaron Donald. Looks like they spent all of it on Tlaib. It's $10.3 million salary for Robert Quinn. They're actually spending more on Tlaib. And I wonder if when they traded Quinn, they knew they were making a play for Tlaib. The Rams hadn't come up as a trade partner for Tlaib. The 49ers had been mentioned. The Broncos had been mentioned. No Rams. Were they planning this all along? Or was this something they did once they realized he really was available and maybe they could get him for a fifth-round pick and pay $11 million? But this is one of the luxuries of having a young quarterback. Even though Jared Goff was the first overall pick in the draft, he doesn't have a starting-level contract. When we did the full list of average annual salaries of quarterbacks, none of the guys operating under a rookie deal are in the top 20. Goff eventually will be. And by the time they pay Goff, Tlaib won't be on the roster anymore. I don't think Tlaib is there past next year. He may not be there past this year. The Rams may just be going all in while they still have Todd Gurley and Jared Goff under the terms of their rookie deal. And who knows? Maybe they'll decide not to pay Aaron Donald. Fine, Aaron, go ahead. Hold out for the entire offseason program, training camp, and preseason. Show up week one like you did last year. It only ended in him being the defensive player of the year. Time for a break. We have more to come here on the Best of Pro Football Talk Live on NBC Sports Radio. Pro Football Talk Live. The NFC West has become the NFL's hottest commodity right now. Everything is running through the West. The Rams doing everything they can to improve the team. Tyrann Mathieu acknowledges that he's been asked to take a pay cut. They're taking money out of my pocket. I don't like how that feels. Speaking of things that don't feel good, PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio reminds you, if you think a train will stop if it sees your car on the tracks, you're right, it will. About a mile after it hits your car. Stop. Trains can't. Paid for by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. So, look, I don't... Wow. Well, hey, they want to make the point? I mean, it's graphic, but it's true. A train will hit you and kill you. Trains do not stop the way that automobiles do. The braking process, slightly more complicated when you are on friction-free rails. All right. So, Tyrann Mathieu, he's due $18.75 million in guaranteed money if he's on the roster the third day of the league year. $14.1 million cap number each of the next two seasons. Arizona would save $4.8 million against the cap by making him a pre-June 1 cut. $11 million as a post-June 1 cut. I'm going to pull up his contract here. I'm surprised there's no trade talk with Mathieu. See, the problem is, he had some good years, but the durability is the question with Mathieu. I mean, I'm sure plenty of teams would be fascinated by the possibility of signing him, but he's got $5.75 million base salary, $5 million roster bonus. He's got that guarantee that kicks in. I'd like to think the Cardinals can work out something with him to keep him around because I think it's important to keep him with Patrick Peterson. And I think maybe they're relying upon that connection to get Mathieu to work with them. And here's how it works. When a team starts sniffing around about a pay cut, you know, even though it's tampering, the agent needs to find out what else is out there so the agent can properly advise the client on whether to take the reduced deal. And I think for the Cardinals' sake, it's actually helpful. Sometimes it helps. If you see that there's no one else out there that's going to pay you what you're supposed to make in Arizona, that's the Dez Bryant dynamic. I'm not going to take a pay cut. Yes, you are. The question is, are you going to take less money from the Cowboys or less money from someone else? And will your current team pay you more? Are you more valuable to your current team than you would be to a new team? And a lot of times, players realize, you know what? I don't want to take this pay cut, but I'm still going to make more than I would anywhere else. Now, every once in a while, you have a player who says, I don't care, because most people aren't going to realize that I'm doing better under a reduced deal here than I would do somewhere else. And I don't want that blow to my ego, the perception that I took less, the perception that they squeezed me to take less. I don't want that. So, Matthew, Stats, did you see him on NFL Network?
Yeah, it was a weird interview. He's sitting on NFL Network, and he gets asked, were you asked to take a pay cut? And he says, I wouldn't know. And then the next question, when he gets asked, would you be open to taking a pay cut? He says, well, I don't know. My first meeting with the Cardinals was this morning. So,
well, but that doesn't mean they asked him to take a pay cut. They just had a meeting.
What do you think they talked about?
Well, concepts, possibilities. Maybe they gave him permission to shop himself in a trade. You know, there are different devices for letting a player realize what his value is. And if you say you can try to set up a trade, part of that trade is finding out what the team would pay, and you realize that other team isn't going to pay. So that's the reality that the Cardinals are facing and Matthew is facing, and it looks like things haven't worked out for him the way that maybe both sides would have envisioned. And that's a shame because I love the kid. But you got to stay healthy. Whatever position you play in the NFL, you've got to stay healthy. DeMarco Murray didn't stay healthy last year. He's out of a job in Tennessee. This one isn't a shock because Derrick Henry has made it clear that he can carry the load. Now, it felt like there was a reluctance to embrace Derrick Henry last year. This new coaching staff seems to be all in with Derrick Henry. And I'm fascinated about where Murray goes from here. The Seahawks are so desperate for a running back, any veteran running back. Hey, DeMarco Murray to the Seahawks. Hey, Jonathan Stewart to the Seahawks. Hey, Frank Gore to the Seahawks. Stats, who would you rather have between? Wait, I'm asking the wrong person. Between DeMarco Murray and Frank Gore. I know who you'd want.
Yeah, I mean, I would be wrong because Murray's clearly the younger player. Gore's ancient by running back standards. But, yeah, I'll always take Frank Gore. I mean, that's my guy, you know.
And I think the key is durability. This gets so overlooked. The ability to suit up and play every week. That's what you need. That's what you need. So the Titans move on. Murray moves on. Gore moves on. Jonathan Stewart moves on. A lot of running backs out there. And a lot of recognizable name running backs out there. And some of those guys are going to land somewhere and do something. Other guys just simply won't. Meanwhile, Adrian Peterson, he's just become forgotten in all this. Adrian Peterson available. And there's a sense that he's done. And you know what? He's the last person you want to tell that to. He made a bad decision last year to go to the Saints. I think what happened was he hit the market. He expected a significant amount of interest. And when there was hardly any, that bruised him. So then the Saints have a bright idea that they're going to couple him with Mark Ingram. And that would have been fine until they got Alvin Kamara. And once they got Kamara and once it became clear that Kamara was going to be good, that's when Adrian Peterson became the odd man out. And it all felt forced. That week one game just felt forced. And now Peterson, who ultimately was injured in Arizona, he had a couple of good games for the Cardinals. This year, where does he go? Time for a break. We have more to come here on the best of Pro Football Talk Live on NBC Sports Radio. Pro Football Talk Live. We're 5 days away from the start of free agency. And the Saints and quarterback Drew Brees inching toward threat level midnight. It's been nearly 8 weeks since the season ended. And what happened? Minutes after the Saints saw their hopes for another Super Bowl appearance disappear in the flash of an eye, that last play of the divisional game in Minnesota. Brees talking about being back with the Saints. I'll be back with the Saints. I'm retiring with the Saints. I'm not leaving New Orleans. I'll be back. He said it at least four times. It was nearly 8 weeks ago. And I remember saying immediately, look, until he signs a new deal with the Saints, he's potentially available in free agency. And if anyone connected to the Saints doesn't like it, If Breeze doesn't like it, sign the new contract. Take the talking point away. I appreciate the fact that they haven't signed a contract. It's given me something to discuss from time to time. And it's now been 3 weeks since Breeze has said anything about the situation, about any situation. He's gone completely off the grid on social media, at least on his Twitter page. Nothing. And his Twitter page is where he said, I will be back. I will be playing for the Saints. He said that there. He said that elsewhere. So here we are, 5 days away. And the last tangible item that we heard about Breeze and the Saints is that the two sides were going to talk contractual parameters at the scouting combine. Okay, fine. Where's the deal? They talk parameters. Why is there no deal? Coach Sean Payton, he'll be back. I don't even think about him not being back. He'll be back. Mickey Loomis, the GM, he'll be back. Okay, where's the contract? We're 5 days away. Now remember, if they don't do a deal before next Wednesday, his contract voids and $18 million in dead money will hit the cap in 2018. If they do a contract before then, $6 million, $6 million, $6 million over the next 3 years. Now, I've said this before, and I'll go ahead and say it again. Every time I say that, I go ahead. I never say I've said this before and I just let it go. I don't know why I even waste my breath. And what was I saying? Oh, what was I saying? Oh, yeah. There's easy ways to deal with the $18 million. You can navigate your way around that. You can engineer a new contract to make that $18 million palatable. The question is, are they going to get anything done at all between the Saints and Breeze? And here's the thing that really fascinates me. Nick Underhill of the New Orleans Advocate posted a tweet, and I'm going to read it for you, word for word. This was last night, 7:57 p.m. Eastern. Worth noting, Underhill says, an NFL spokesman tells me that Breeze can't begin negotiating with teams on the 12th like other free agents. Has to wait until his contract voids on the 14th. Okay, that's fair. It's accurate, and I wish I'd thought of that. He's not a normal free agent. Even though they couldn't tag him, even though he will be a free agent on Wednesday, he's not a guy whose contract is set to expire on Wednesday. His contract is set to void. And because of that distinction, he doesn't get to enjoy the two-day negotiating window where his agent, Tom Condon, can talk to this team, that team, that team, and get official offers lined up. Okay, that's fine. This thing's intriguing to me, though. And reporters always get antsy when we speculate on their sources, so I'm not going to do that. But I will say this. First of all, an NFLPA spokesman. There's only one NFLPA spokesman. It's George Atala. So there's something fishy about saying an NFLPA spokesman. If you say an NFL spokesman, I say, okay, there's like 20 of them. NFLPA spokesman, there's one guy. Now, that's not big in isolation, but I look at this as, and this has happened before. Again, I'm not speculating on Underhill's source. I'm just telling you what's happened before. Someone with an agenda who wants to get something out there will leak it with a specific request, not just that the attribution be vague. Just say a league source. Please don't say a team source. I hear that all the time. Don't say a team source. Say a league source. Keep it vague. I don't want anyone to think I gave this to you, even though I'm giving it to you. I don't want it to come back to me, even though I have a reason for this to get out. That's first level. Cover the tracks. Next level cover the tracks is to affirmatively request that you mislead as to who the source is. That you go next level and say, hey, do this. Do me a favor here. Because I cannot. Look, the last thing we want to do is inflame the situation by creating the impression that we're trying to keep Drew Brees away from talking to other teams. Can you please say it was a union source? An NFLPA spokesman. How about that? Will you say that? And I don't think this nugget is big enough to justify that kind of chicanery, but it's happened. And if the Saints are pushing this, they can't afford to let Brees think they're pushing it. So what better way than to say, hey, I'll give you this, but you have to do me a favor here. You can't even do league source. we have to be so far removed from this. There's no way that Breeze or Condon can think the Saints are putting this out there. But who else would put it out there? Why wouldn't you at least go to the league for the clarification? This is, if I wanted to know whether or not Drew Breeze is going to be a free agent of the kind that can talk to other teams as of Monday during that 48-hour window, I wouldn't go to the union. I'd go to the league. Hey, NFL. Drew Brees has his contract that voids. Does that mean he's like the others? The NFL is the one that has jurisdiction over this. The NFLPA doesn't care. The NFLPA is in favor of maximum player movement. They're not going to do anything to throw water on the ability of Drew Brees to talk to other teams. And here's the other reality. None of this is going to stop Tom Condon from talking to other teams. I'm sure he already has. I'm sure he already knows. So this, to me, if there's any remote chance that the Saints have their fingerprints on this leak, it tells me something's going on. Saints and Breeze aren't making progress. And Saints hoping to scare away with this report. Anybody who may have otherwise called Condon on Monday and said, okay, here's our offer. Because I think what happens in Indianapolis is this. Teams will indicate interest, but they don't get specific. They may get general about what they would pay, but they don't get specific until the two-day window opens. Then you already have a feeling what's going to happen if you're the agent and you've talked to all the teams. You have a pretty good feeling who's going to make offers. The offers start coming. This is aimed, whether it was intended this way or not, the practical effect is this underscores for anyone who would be inclined to make an offer to Drew Brees on Monday, don't do it. This puts the brakes on that process. And look, it still isn't going to stop it. But the news item that should have broken on Thursday, March 8 at 7:57 p.m. Eastern isn't this obscure nugget about when and how Brees and other teams may negotiate next week. It should be, per league source, Drew Brees and the Saints have agreed to terms on a 3-year deal. That's what should be breaking. That's what needs to happen. And if Brees needs to talk to other teams to understand that the Saints are making a fair offer that's within the ballpark of what other teams would pay, and it's a respectful and appropriate and fair amount, you should want Brees to look around to see what else is out there. But Tom Condon already knows. You already know what's behind doors 2, 3, 4, 5. However many other doors there are, however many other teams are interested. And I don't, if I'm the Broncos or the Vikings, I'm interested. If I'm thinking about paying Kirk Cousins $27.5 million plus whatever he needs to separate from Jimmy Garoppolo until Aaron Rodgers comes in and trumps them all. If I'm going to pay that much to Cousins, I'm paying that much to Brees, if not more. On a short-term deal, on an all-in push. And I think the Vikings would be the perfect team to make the all-in push, especially if they have any misgivings about Cousins, any misgivings about Keenum, if they think they can hold the band together for 1 year with Brees. You know, what you do is like a 5-year deal with Brees with a huge signing bonus that gets spread over 5 years, and you at least have a manageable cap number for this year, and you can hold your team together, and then you draft a rookie to replace him. And in those first few years of the rookie's contract, you're carrying the burden from Brees. That's the easy thing to do if you want to go all in with Brees. But I'm just, look, Stats, you've been with me the entire, 3 years, but the last 4 weeks, the last 8 weeks, I've been banging this drum, and we're getting closer and closer. And I think the drums are pounding now. And I think this nugget from last night, this is the first concrete sign that all may not be well between Brees and the Saints.
And if you're Brees, you've already gotten to this point. Don't you at least want to wait until Wednesday just to see what the other offers are? Don't you at least, aren't you just curious at this point? I mean, what's another couple days to wait if you're going to re-sign anyway? Why not just see what's there?
Well, and you may not have to wait till Wednesday. Here's the thing. You wait till Monday and Tuesday, number one, to see what's there, wink, nod for you, but also to see what Cousins is going to get. Because if Cousins is going to sign on March 14, and there's no guarantee he will. I was told last week he's going to take a visit. But at a minimum, I think someone will be leaking numbers on Monday or Tuesday, ballparks, ranges. And if you're Breeze, you at least wait until Wednesday. And you do have leverage. If the Saints want to have an easier cap situation to manage, you have a little bit of leverage. But your ultimate leverage is, I'll go play for somebody else. But Drew, you said you were going to play for the Saints. Well, yeah, but I thought the Saints wanted me to play for them. The offer that they've given to me suggests that they don't. When we return, we have more to come here on the Best of Pro Football Talk Live on NBC Sports Radio. This is the Best of Pro Football Talk Live on NBC Sports Radio. I'm your host, Mike Florio. The Patriots may be falling apart. Weird things happening right now in New England. We already knew about the tales of dysfunction that were much discussed and debated. Some other changes still potentially coming. First of all, an effort to make the team better fell flat. NFL media reported that the Patriots made a better offer for Michael Bennett, at least as it relates to draft pick compensation. Now, the Eagles were able to throw in speedy receiver Marcus Johnson. According to Ian Rappaport, the Patriots made their offer too late, and the Seahawks, to their credit, declined to renege on the deal that was already done with the Eagles. They could. This is a prime example of what could happen. A better deal comes along after you've agreed with the Eagles, and you could say, hey, Eagles, sorry, we got a better offer. You know, this deal's not done, so we can cancel it anytime we want. We cancel it. We exercise our right to cancel. See, the problem with that is you'd never be able to do another deal with the Eagles, and the word would get out that you can't be trusted. That's why these deals won't fall apart. Well, look, I'm jinxing it by saying it. They shouldn't fall apart between the two teams. I think the only way that we would see a trade fall apart as a practical matter is if, as part of the trade, the player who is changing teams has a tentative deal to adjust his contract, extend his contract, shorten it, whatever, and that player gets cold feet and says, you know what, I'll go through with the trade, but I'm not adjusting my deal. And then the two teams look at each other and say, well, yeah, that's kind of the key to getting the deal done, so we'll agree to go our separate ways. The news of the effort to get Michael Bennett, the failed effort to get Michael Bennett by the Patriots, comes at a time when the Patriots have cut his brother Martellus. Martellus Bennett was due to earn a $2 million roster bonus. Remember, the Patriots claimed him on waivers last year after the Packers cut him following the trade deadline. Any vested veteran who is cut after the trade deadline goes through waivers. Patriots claimed him. He said he can't play. He's got a shoulder problem. He played until the shoulder kept him from playing, and now the Patriots deciding not to continue the relationship. Does that mean that they know Gronk's coming back, or are they making that decision regardless? You know, I don't think that we can look at the decision to cut Bennett as an indication that Gronk's coming back, because that $2 million they saved by cutting Bennett, that could be part of the Jimmy Graham signing bonus, or the Tyler Eifert roster bonus, or the Austin Seferian Jenkins guaranteed salary, whatever the case may be. Until we see what the Patriots do in free agency, and after that the draft, we won't know. I continue to be fascinated by the fact that Rob Gronkowski has not let the Patriots know what he's going to do. Or if he has, they're keeping it secret. It was odd last week when I said to Drew Rosenhaus, well, if the Patriots asked for an answer, well, I can't divulge that. Now, part of that is just this generalized fear of the Patriots. They've managed to convince every agent, don't say anything about us ever. But I think it's reasonable to think the Patriots would want to know what's going on. They got a plan. Whether they have Gronk or not, fairly significant aspect of the offseason planning. They need to plan for life without Nate Solder. There was a tweet from Scott Zolak, who calls Patriots games for the Patriots Radio Network. He tweeted, 5 days ago, would never think he'd be gone. I think it's happening. Then Deion Lewis and Malcolm Butler. Fun week. Look, Malcolm Butler leaving is not a shock. The guy was put on ice for the entire Super Bowl, except for one courtesy special teams play. He can say he played in Super Bowl 52 on one play, punt return. Deion Lewis has a robust market coming. The Patriots don't pay big money for running backs. They'd rather have six moderately to lowly paid running backs. So Deion Lewis goes elsewhere. I heard last week there were like seven or eight teams who were poised to be pursuing Deion Lewis. But Nate Solder, left tackle, who has a clause preventing the Patriots from tagging him, they didn't. He becomes a free agent. And there was a report over the weekend from the Boston Herald that the Patriots are bracing for him to leave, that he's going to get $12 million a year or more. And the Patriots just aren't going to pay it. They'll make do with what they have. Stats, you got a question.
Can you remember an off season where the Patriots are going to go through so much change? On the field, you mentioned Solder, Lewis, maybe Gronk could be gone as well. Patricia's gone as a defensive coordinator. I mean, Tom Brady's got to be looking around thinking, what's going on over here?
Well, at least they kept Josh McDaniels. Right? It could have been worse. If McDaniels hadn't reneged on his deal with the Colts, it would have been worse. But this is the primary test of the reality, and we've come to accept this. As long as they have Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, they'll be fine. Well, we'll see how fine they are this year. Time for a break. We have more to come here on the Best of Pro Football Talk Live on NBC Sports Radio.